Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Here we go on a lively Wednesday. It's Los Angeles, center of the NBA universe this morning. It's the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening. Fox Sports Radio, FS1, iHeartRadio, great to have you in. Very lucky break for us. We get Alex Smith, who just retired from the NFL, in studio in 1 hour from now. Good for us. Can't wait to see Alex Smith. Boy, he knows. He could go to the front office. He could be a broadcaster. He could be a coach. He's got the world's his oyster right now for Alex Smith. So it's great to have him in the building today. We feel very, very fortunate. And he'll be joining us. And Joy Taylor, wow. Wow. One season in L.A. appears to be about over. Another one is barely alive today.
What did I say? You better not lose in the first round. Playing around, I don't know. This was not a good night for the Clippers, but that was a great, great Lakers-Suns game.
It was. Chris Paul, by the way, only played 23 minutes, and the Lakers had to hang on for the win. If I'm Frank Vogel this morning, Lakers coach, he's been in a lot of these playoff series. I had a restless night's sleep. So Anthony Davis was not only fantastic, but super aggressive. He didn't always play like that. Dennis Schroeder may have played his best game as a Laker, certainly his best playoff game. It's not even close. Okay, he was great last night. Andre Drummond was super effective, and LeBron played well. And we held on to beat Phoenix in trouble in the fourth, and Chris Paul wasn't around in the end. And I'm not sure Chris Paul's got more than 50% of him right now. He's not playing in crunch time minutes. What does that tell you? Phoenix is a tough first rounder. Remember, they're a two seed. The Lakers last year won the championships facing five seeds and nine seeds and three seeds. That's the downside to being a seven seed for the Lakers. Your toughest matchup, maybe your first matchup. I mean, they would get the Blazers or Nuggets next. They match up well with those teams. Now Jamal Murray's out. After that, it'd be the Clippers who can't play late, or Dallas that plays no defense, or it'd be Utah. Lakers match up very well with Utah, but Phoenix has an answer for a lot of what the Lakers offer. I guess the upside is KCP gave you Zippo, Alex Caruso gave you Zippo, Kyle Kuzma gave you Zippo, and all of them have talent and are generally semi-productive, and none of them were last night, so I'd feel good about that. But Anthony Davis, that's as aggressive as I've ever seen him play. And Dennis Schroeder was crazy town good. He was fantastic. And can you get that AD again? Let's be honest about AD. We know he's good, but can I get that AD four more times in the series? How about just three? Because if they do, they'll win. But remember why AD was so great last night. Because he was so bad in game one and everybody called him soft on every show. Every newspaper article. Every blogger, everybody in the world, he's soft. So he's motivated. Well, is he going to be motivated after a performance like last night? He's not LeBron James. He's not Michael Jordan. He's not self-motivated. He needs a poke. So never forget this. The Lakers are 11-0 in Anthony Davis's best playoff games as a Laker. 11-0. They're 500 in the rest. And so this Phoenix team, last year in the bubble, the Lakers got a little bit of a break. They faced a 9 seed, a 5 seed, a 3 seed, and a 5 seed. Well, Phoenix is a 2 seed, and they're really good. This series, before it started, may have been as simple as this. AD has a history of getting hurt. LeBron came in less than 100%. Chris Paul has a history of getting hurt in the playoffs. It may have been just this simple. Which star gets hurt first? And the answer was Chris Paul. And that may decide the series. Because this morning, I think if Chris Paul's healthy, Phoenix is up 2-0 and creates a major, matchup issue. I mean, good luck stopping Devin Booker. Phoenix matches up really well with the Lakers. Really well. But not as well when Chris Paul's not around in the fourth quarter. As far as Anthony Davis, after the game, we know that if he plays like last night, the series is over. He's a dominant player. Last year in the bubble, on his best nights, Lakers were 10-0 in the bubble when he had his best nights. Now they're 1-0 in the playoffs when he has his best night. Here's AD after.
In order for us to win a series, to win games, I can't have that performance. So I put it on myself, you know, as all leaders do. And I want to make sure that I made a statement this game, come out with more energy, more effort on both ends of the floor. Just trusting my work, getting back in the gym, seeing the ball go through the net, and it paid off tonight.
Can we get that again? All right. The Herd brought to you by Jersey Mike Subs. Be a sub above. Now let's talk Clippers. It's one thing to not play defense late. It's another thing to lose both games in the series at home. What's worse is after you lose, Ty Lue, Paul George, no biggie, nothing to see here, no concern. Really? I've got eyes. I can see you can't stop Luka and you're down 0-2. I've got eyes. I can read. I know your history. Remember, the Clippers tanked the last two games to meet this team. And Paul George said last year, hey, we just need time together. All righty. You've got it. And now it's 0-2. The Clippers need to look themselves in the mirror. After last year, they blamed Doc Rivers. You are fired. Now he is coaching the number one seed in the East, and he has apparently been able to solve the matrix of Embiid and Simmons don't get along. And then they blame the bubble. Well, we don't have a bubble. And the Lakers won in the bubble, and you eroded. And they blame time. We just need time together. All right, they've had time together. And then it was Lou Williams' fault. And Montrezl Harrell. All right, they're gone too. And you've lost five straight playoff games. They're all gone. How's it feel this morning? You got to sort of look yourself in the mirror. Because I'll tell you what time doesn't solve. Paul George erratic history in the playoffs. And Kawhi Leonard's lack of leadership DNA. Time does not solve those. And you know what's funny? Is that the Clippers don't have a history of winning. The Lakers, same building, have a history of greatness. And so when the Clippers were purchased by Steve Ballmer, they don't really have a book on how to do this right. They went out and said, let's just get two really talented guys. Does anybody love us? Okay, two guys fell in love with us. Paul George, Kawhi Leonard. We want to be loved. We've never been loved. We want to be loved. Two guys love us. Come on in. But the Lakers don't operate that way. The Lakers have always had great players. But the Lakers have only won titles when the great players were leaders. Wilt wasn't a leader. Jerry West was. They won a title. Kareem wasn't really a go-to leader. It was more Magic. Then for a decade, they won a bunch of titles. And then there's Kobe. And then there's LeBron and leaders. The Lakers, lots of players have fallen in love with the Lakers. Lots of players have fallen in love. But the Lakers have a history. They know what wins titles. When the greatest player is a leader. The Clippers just had two guys fall in love with them. Nobody ever falls in love with the Clippers. So they just said, come on board. And didn't really consider the leadership component. And you can see Rondo last night, who won titles with the Lakers last year and with Boston. You see him barking at Ty Lue. You see him barking at players. Because he can see the truth. This team doesn't have a leader. They're rudderless. But they're talented. And, you know, so this idea that everything's okay. It's no big deal. We're going to get past this. I think Rondo's looking around and seeing what you're seeing and I'm seeing. And what does Steve Ballmer think of this? He owns the team, bought it for twice the value, reportedly. The Clippers spent $64 million on Luke Kennard. He was a DNP last night. And on Marcus Morris, they spent $64 million too, and he's ineffective. So Steve Ballmer's thinking, man, I wrote a lot of checks. One of the guys isn't playing. One of the guys is not effective. The two guys I thought were great aren't leaders. Ty Lue can't solve what Doc Rivers couldn't solve. I think there's a tension and an anxiety around the Clippers this morning, and it is not okay. Although Paul George, after, said it was all okay.
There is a competition. We got to rise to the occasion. You know, fact of the matter is, if we don't, we're done for. There's no level of concern. I mean, we just got to play our game. We got to play through this. We got to incorporate our defense. Luka's going to get his touches. We just got to do a better job defensively of just quieting everyone else.
If I was a Clipper executive this morning, I would update my LinkedIn. I would polish off my resume. It is not okay in the eyes of Steve Ballmer.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Not only did Aaron Rodgers not show up for the Packers OTA yesterday, either did any of his top five Packer wide receivers. Probably not a coincidence. Feels a little orchestrated. Receivers supporting their man. Matt LaFleur is the head coach in a tough spot. You can tell when a crisis has developed, when somebody has to go speak in front of the media and they start talking in what they call these days a word salad. They talk and don't say anything. And Matt LaFleur is a very articulate guy. But here he is talking about Jordan Love, and this is utter nonsense.
Right now, I think even as we're scripting, we're less concerned about trying to put maybe the perfect person in position to, you know, like we would in a game plan situation. It's more about just making sure that we're putting Jordan in situations so he can continue to progress.
Word salad. That means nothing. And that's a smart guy. He's in a really tough spot. Green Bay has got a mess on their hands. My only question at this point, will Aaron Rodgers fold? I listened to a sports talk radio show yesterday, and the host is one of those hosts who likes to take phone calls. And he took them from Packer fans, and 100% were against Aaron and pro-Packers. And Aaron likes to be liked. We know that. Aaron doesn't love criticism. But Aaron has made it me versus them, and Packer Nation is behind them. And Aaron did not want it to end like Favre, and it's ending worse than Favre. And the Packer followers, bless their heart, you know, they've seen this act before, but it all turned out okay. So a lot of them are probably thinking, it'll be okay. I'm not sure about that. But it's one thing for Aaron to no-show. But if Aaron no-shows and the receivers all don't no-show, what does that feel like? It's orchestrated. And that hurts Jordan Love too. So even if you love Aaron Rodgers and you have his jersey and you name your dog Aaron Rodgers and you've got pictures of Aaron Rodgers, it's easier to hate him when it feels like he's hurting you not just now, but he's hurting your future. You can't even develop Jordan Love on the right timeline. Now, the media is overwhelmingly still in Aaron Rodgers' camp. Packers don't love the fact that guys like me and other networks and Joy and everybody who does this for a living and every columnist and every blogger is pretty much in Aaron's camp, which is, could you get him an occasional receiver? Could you draft an occasional offensive player in the first round? Could you maybe spend a nickel and get J.J. Watt? Could you treat him at least half as nice as Tom Brady, Russell Wilson, Patrick Mahomes, or Josh Allen? But Aaron is losing stuff here, too. He's losing money. He's losing fan support. And Mark Murphy is not budging. According to a story this morning, Mark Murphy will not fire Brian Gutekunst. Will not. So we have a line in the sand. And I know Mark Murphy is not going to budge. Because Mark Murphy, steeped in tradition, believes he has a responsibility to the Packers organization to not create a precedent where you fold to a player. And how do I know that? Because I watched it with Favre and I've watched it with Aaron Rodgers. The question is, does Aaron Rodgers have the stomach to be hated in Green Bay? And eventually some media people will turn on Aaron. You know, bloggers, cheeseheads that have blogs, that kind of thing. So that's what it comes down to. Does Aaron have the stomach? Because Mark Murphy's not going to budge. And Aaron's telling us, I'm not going to budge. And Aaron's history is, he doesn't like to be disliked. He's losing money. He's losing fan support. And Mark Murphy's not budging. And I believe him.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app. Or wherever you get your podcast.
Momentum's a powerful thing now because of social media, now more so than ever. Something with a grain of truth, but not necessarily truthful, gains some steam. It's an avalanche on social media, and people think, oh, that's the truth. LeBron has played basketball mostly in the social media generation. People don't want to do homework. I miss the days of data and truth. We are now in a post-truth society. There's always been this thing with LeBron, he's not clutch. It is, of course, utter nonsense. People believe in UFOs, and there's grainy footage. We have real footage of LeBron winning multiple games and championships with clutch shots, and still people want to believe he's not clutch. Did it again last night, biggest shot of the game, 2:55 left, Lakers up one, game can go either way. Here's what transpires.
And LeBron, 18-4-8 for him, carving his way. James puts in a beautiful fadeaway.
Man, oh man, that is straight butter there by LeBron James.
We got about 50 pieces of video like that. He's clutch. Two others that always stick out to me is Tom Brady was a system quarterback. They won 11 games with Matt Cassel. Okay. They won 18 the year before, 14 with a blowout, and had a point differential of 315. They look like a college team. Tom gets hurt. Matt Cassel, good dude, comes in. They win 11. That's seven less wins. They were blown out multiple times. They did not make the playoffs, and the point differential was 100. It's Google. You could look it up. He's not a system quarterback. How's the system working this morning in New England? The second thing is Tony Romo's bad in the fourth quarter. He has the second highest fourth quarter passer rating to Russell Wilson in the history of football. He has seven more fourth quarter comebacks than Aaron Rodgers. But he fumbled that snap on a drizzly day in Seattle, and Bill Parcells retired, and everybody thought, oh, look at that. Hey, that guy's not clutch. Tony Romo was great in the fourth quarter. The highest fourth quarter passer ratings ever. Russell Wilson, Romo, Rodgers, Young, Brady. Yeah, that means that's not one of those bizarre stats that like a journeyman leads a sport. Romo was great in the fourth quarter. Tom Brady's not a system quarterback. And LeBron James is really, really clutch. It's called Google. You can look up each one.
You guys like the NFL? What about college football? Well, I have you covered. I'm John Middlecoff. I host the 3 and Out podcast. I need you to go subscribe. You can find it wherever you listen to your podcast. Used to scout in the NFL and even working in college football. Coming up this week, how Phil Mickelson should open the eyes of NFL GMs. Rodgers drama, Julio Jones. Where's he going to get traded to? I have you covered. Three and Out podcast. Go subscribe.
How lucky are we today? 16 years, three Pro Bowls, multiple awards. Alex Smith, suddenly retired, is our guest now joining us live. We don't get many live guests since the pandemic. And we've got Alex Smith today. How are you, Alex Smith? You look fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for having me. It is good to be in person live.
It is.
Rolling. Yeah, good to be here.
And so let's just talk, first of all, Joy and I had said this, because we like you, and I said last year, okay, Alex Smith was on television, and I had knots in my stomach. We said this. We're like, okay, this is hard. And I'm thinking, you didn't. You were obviously. But was there a moment for you? Did you sense the anxiety based on your comeback and the structure of your leg? Did you sense there were a lot of us going, all right, slide, Alex, throw it out of bounds? Did you sense that?
You know, first off, I never fully imagined or expected to be in that situation. You know, I honestly think throughout the recovery, I really thought I'd never get there. I thought the journey would end. You know, right. The pursuit's great, like, but I'm not actually going to get there. It's just it's impossible. And you know, I'm so lucky. You just kept going, and then those final steps, though, absolutely were terrifying. I mean, to make the conscious decision when I got the approval to play, when I got the bill of health, and it's like, well, I'm gonna go step back out on a football field deliberately. And when you play quarterback, it's not like a matter of if I get tackled again. I mean, you're going out there to play quarterback. Like it's gonna happen. And then the uniqueness of the year with no preseason, so I didn't get to do any preseason to kind of test it.
Right.
In camp, you wear a jersey, so you have this like cape of invincibility out there. You right. know, like it's hard to know what's realistic. It always changes a little bit when you get out there and the bullets are flying. So no doubt, the combination of exhilaration and that feeling of being alive, which is what was part of the reason I pursued this. You know, that to get back to that, but also the just sheer terror. You know, to be out there, I'm going back out, and my leg snapped the last time I was out there, like literally. And, you know, I'm running back out into that environment. So a little crazy, you know, honestly, but an amazing feeling. And the best feeling of all is obviously to get tackled and get back up and know I was okay. That to conquer that mentally, you know, the walls that I had built up and really playing football again at the NFL level to be my Everest. And to go back and to do that and to really have, you know, to deal with my own kind of self-doubt in that moment, it was amazing to kind of push through that and work through that.
I love sports. I admit the only thing I don't like about sports is to see players hurt.
Yeah.
So I have never watched your video for the second time. the Tim Crumry video, Joe Theismann. I refuse to watch it.
Yeah.
I can't watch the Louisville basketball player. I can't watch it.
Yeah.
Nothing is sadder to me. So your documentary, it's on the shelf. And I keep thinking, no, I don't want to watch it. I don't want to go through that. I don't want to see him hurt. You're a family guy, great family, great kids, great wife. There had to have been a moment where she's like, honey, no. Like, were there really, really deep conversations?
Oh, without a doubt. Really deep conversations about what do I really want? What do we really want and why? I'm incredibly lucky because, to be honest, when that conversation happened, and, you know, for a long time, football was 1,000 steps away. I might as well have been like going to Mars, you know? So, sure, like, hey, babe, you're doing great. Yeah, go try. You know, this is great. And obviously, that was amazing. The real gut check came in those last moments, when I got cleared to play, which I never thought I would get.
Where were you?
Oh, we had just gotten back. This is in the midst of COVID. You know, there was no off season, so I'd been away, still kind of just doing my rehab on my own quietly. No one expected me. I hadn't had any imaging done in a long time on my leg. We didn't know where I was at from a healing process, my bone. And I go back. This is on the doorstep of camp. You know, a couple of weeks before training camp, we go back to DC, and I get a bunch of imaging done. And I'm really kind of expecting it had kind of been not great news all along with my tibia healing. And I'm expecting to hear, you know, it's not in the cards.
It's over.
And, you know, expected to walk into that. And then I hear the news. It's the exact opposite. They're incomplete. The team of surgeons and doctors all were in agreement that I could go play. that I could do anything. And I had never heard those words that like a clean bill of health, you can go do whatever you want from a health standpoint. And I'm like, I can go ski, snowboard. And they're like, yeah. I'm like, I can go mountain bike. Yeah. I'm like trying to think of these crazy things. Cause for 2 years I'd walked around on eggshells, you know, trying not to even slip and fall in the kitchen or getting, you know, out of the shower. And all of a sudden I'm like, well, I can play tackle football. And they're like, yeah, you want to play, you can play. Wow. So leaving that meeting, you know, my wife and I were sitting in there, and then we go sit in the car. And I mean, yeah, one of the most intimate conversations I've ever had with my wife here. And I'm so excited. I can't get the grin on my face because I've got this clean bill of health that I never thought I'd get again. At the same time, I'm terrified because the football's right there. I mean, it's right, that line's right there. And there's the next step. And I just got the green light to take that step. And I'm really scared, and I really want my wife to tell me what you just said. You know what, babe? Life is good. We're so lucky to be back here. We got your health back. Kids are great. Like, let's just get on with our life and be done. And for me, my wife helped nurse me back to health. The number of hats she wore over this 2-year process is crazy. And then in that moment, for her to have the strength to give me the nudge I needed, it's like, no, babe, I think you need to do this. I think you're going to have regret if you don't see this through. You know, for 2 years, you've been working your tail off to get to this position, and we're so lucky to be here now, and I think you got to go do this. And I'm hoping she tells me, let's go, let's be done, retire, you know? And like, so, but I needed that. I needed that nudge. So lucky that my wife, to have that kind of strength, I'm not sure I could have done it if the roles were reversed. So thankful for her to kind of give me that push. And you know, there's been people throughout my recovery process that have helped me with that, that kind of continue to keep pushing me when I needed it.
All the awards you've won, multiple Pro Bowls, what did Comeback Player of the Year award mean?
I think the award was special. It's not something I set out to do. Again, I never thought it was realistic. I never thought I'd be, actually get make it back out on a field.
What did players say to you during the season?
You know, it was so weird. A ton of support. It was COVID, so there's no fans. So going back to when I played, there was no like heightened energy. There were no fans in any of the stadiums, especially at home games. So it was always a little different from an energy standpoint. But it was amazing to get a lot of the love from, you know, even the opposing teams when I did get to visit with them. Obviously, I've over 16 years, you accumulate a lot of friends across the league, and then my own teammates. You know, they were so amazing throughout that process, supporting me. And all the steps, you know, from my first practice rep, you know, to then like the game when I first got the dress, and all the way to you know, obviously getting to start 6 games, you know, and my teammates there to be with me and to really kind of to be that energy for me and, you know, support me along the way was amazing. And that's also, you know, the big reason you come back is for that camaraderie. You just can't get that. You can't get that bond anywhere else. And so for me, it was really special. And obviously the entire year to get all of that back, and something I never thought I could do again.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Alex Smith joining us for our radio audience. So a couple of questions here. You've had so many connections through the years. Let's start with this one. This will be a fun one. We both know Urban Meyer. You know him really well. I know him pretty well. What's going to be the hardest part of college to pro? He was your college coach.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple things. The big one's getting everybody to buy in. You know, you go from dealing with 18 to 20-year-old kids who, and in college football, you're Urban Meyer. You're this, you know, big persona. You know, and really you got a lot of control over these kids, and they're at a pivotal age. And really, you can really kind of dictate a lot about these kids buying in and being a part of the program or go packing, you know. It's not like that the NFL, you know. Like, that guy's signed on for 5 years, so
148
you know,
million.
Hey, that guy's 33, grown, you know, 12-year vet with 3 kids. Like, you are going to handle guys differently. I think Urban. I don't think that's going to be a problem for Urban. I think he's spent a lot of time studying this. I even think his progression as a college coach, you know, Utah to Florida and then retiring and then going to Ohio State. I mean, that was a quasi minor league team anyway.
Right.
So I think he's dealt with those personalities, and I think he'll be fine with that. I think guys want to buy in. You know, it's Jacksonville. They were 1-15. Guys want to win. They want to be a part of the change.
Right.
It's going to be able to get that momentum going. And the proof's in the pudding. I mean, you got to start winning games and build it, and that's how you keep guys on board. And then a little transition, and this is less so. I think this has to do with the timing. Is the game has changed at the NFL level from an X's and O's standpoint. When I got drafted, it was a gimmicky college offense that I ran.
Gimmicky.
I was in the shotgun every play. We were running the spread option. I'm reading a defensive end on a run play. That can't be done in the NFL.
That was questioned about.
Yeah,
you.
And I got to be a pro style quarterback. I mean, now it's like, let's go. I mean, what team's not doing that? What team isn't living in the shotgun? Obviously, the timing to get Trevor Lawrence, I think, about as bona fide of a prospect as you can get. I think all that said, I think that's all stuff that I think Urban's got on his side. So I'm excited for him. I've had a chance to visit with him here, since he took the job, and he's got so much energy. I think he's got a plan laid out. I think he's been thinking about this for a long time. He's not a guy that makes rash decisions. He's incredibly smart, incredibly thoughtful. I'm so excited to see what he's going to do. That was probably the hardest part with me stepping away, potentially, was, that excited me to potentially go down there and be a part of that. But I'm excited to watch what happens. I think he's got a great plan and a good shot at it.
He's the best offensive coach in college football history, in my opinion, the most creative. Then you go to the NFL with Andy Reid, who is, to me, the best play designer in league history. Give me the moment, the epiphany, the car ride, the connection to Andy Reid, and you're like, oh, so this is what it's all about. This guy really is different as an offensive coach.
Yeah, there were probably a couple times, forever from the outside, I'm like, oh, he's this traditional West Coast offense. He runs the West Coast. And I'd been in the West Coast before I got to Andy, and a lot of times it's very stringent. Like, here's your playbook. This is what we're running, right? And we're trying to get players to match this playbook. It got formed, obviously, in the Niner days. We need a guy to play Z, like Jerry Rice, and we need a guy to play X, like John Taylor. And, we got to get the pieces to fit into this playbook because this is what we're running, and we've been running it for 20-plus years. It works. And then you get there with Andy, and obviously he knows his ball, but, yeah, we're running these core West Coast principles, but, I mean, we're doing them all over the place and shifts and motions, and he is fearless and constantly evolving. And for me, that was like a huge wake-up call. I don't know, we're saying this is West Coast. I'm in the shotgun. We got a fly sweep guy. We got, Tyreek Hill's running this and Kelsey's running this, and how much fun that was, And I think how much Coach loves teaching. Like, at his core, he's a teacher.
Yes, he is.
And he loves that. And I know that was a big thing, obviously, as he came from Philly, wearing kind of multiple hats as a GM and doing the roster stuff, really stepping away from that because he wanted to get back to teaching, and to hear my first install when Coach Reid does the install, he's a head coach, he's installing the plays in front of the entire offense. And this guy can coach the left tackle, the center, the quarterback, the running back, the stance and route running of the receivers. I mean, there's not a position on offense that Coach Reid can't coach and knows his stuff about, the fundamentals, the things that actually make a difference. And for me, forever as a quarterback, if you throw a ball high, of course, you're going to hear, you got to get it down. And I'm like, well, I'm an NFL quarterback. Like, of course I know I got to get it down. you throw it out in front. You got to put it on him. Yeah, thanks. I knew that already. Coach Reid is one of the first guys to constantly be like, well, why was that ball high? Hey, maybe you were a little too spread apart right here with your legs. Let's be getting back into an athletic position. Teaching, constantly helping me get the ball down, not just stating the obvious. So, that's what I loved about him, and he loves ball. I mean, that's contagious. When your head coach just loves football, he loves coming to work. He loves being around the guys. That feeds out throughout the building.
So, Alex Smith joining us. If you're listening on radio, what a pleasure for us. It could take you for next 4 hours. We should just cancel the rest of the programming today. I'll just talk to Alex Smith. We've been talking about the Jordan Love situation. There was a pandemic, no preseason. I have no idea what he looks like. But I do believe that if somebody is special, you see glimpses of it. So Peter Schrager had told me a year and a half, Mahomes was like in camp, like the first OTA, and he's like, I'm hearing stuff about Mahomes. And I'm like, well, he better be pretty good because Alex Smith has made the playoffs. So go back to the first couple practices with Mahomes. Did you see the magic?
Oh, without a doubt, that year you knew he could play football. I think, again, going back, it's hard as a quarterback when you got the jersey on, and you're in practice and you're untouchable. to really kind of fully see how that translates to the field, especially with Patrick, who a lot of the play, a lot of the magic happens for him off script, and he's so good at it and has such great instinct. So you could see that on the field. And then you saw the confidence, I think. For me, I remember like midway through the year, and we would compete at everything, like quarterbacks. It was a fun time there. Coach Nagy was still there, and we're rolling. We would compete hard. You know, we'd be doing individual drill and just, you know, it was like who could beat who over there. And I remember, you know, he jumps in for some reps running scout team against our defense, and we had a good defense at the time. And, like, I remember the first couple of times he starts whipping around no-look passes, and you're like, that's not normal, you know? Like, just from a confidence standpoint, like, who has the confidence to just, like, whipping in no-look slants? Like, the only guy I've ever seen that's Brett Favre ever do something like that. And really then, you know, that final game, week 17, to watch him, you know, we had clinched and we couldn't do any better. So I wasn't playing, and he got to go out and play. And to see it live in action, I mean, it was like, yeah, this kid's got it. Because I don't care what your physical tools are at the NFL level, and obviously his are special, but you gotta have it up here. You gotta be able to process fast, you gotta be able to play fast. And really it's a mental game at the NFL level. And Patrick had it. And, you know, and that was clear, I think, throughout the season, his work habits. He could process information. And then, you know, you obviously pair that with like a crazy skill set. And you know, this is what we've gotten. A guy that I really think one of the unique players in NFL history, especially to date, you know, winning the MVP that early on and a Super Bowl. So it's fun to watch. I mean, even for me just to have like a little sliver to have been there with him in his rookie year, it's fun. I'm such a big fan of Patrick's. And also just because of the person he is. He's such a great dude. I mean, especially in the face of this kind of limelight and stardom, to have maintained the good person that he is even, you know, I think makes it more special.
Final question. How surprised are you how ugly Aaron Rodgers and the Packers has become? Surprised?
It's inexcusable. It's absolutely, I think.
What do you mean?
How they ever got to this point. I mean, Aaron's been there 16 years. What he's given to that organization and been there. And for them, I think, to what happened last year during the draft, and I haven't talked to Aaron about this, so I don't want to like put words in his mouth, but clearly to watch the interview and him talk about it, it's about the people. And it is, and Aaron's been there that long, and I don't think it was the fact that they drafted Jordan Love in the first round. I mean, I think it's the fact that you just – how do you have a guy like Aaron and you don't go make sure beforehand you aren't going out of your way to make sure that he knows that he's loved, that they want him there, that we may be taking a quarterback in the first round. We want to make sure you're okay with it. This is maybe what we're doing. We're thinking. How you haven't treated him the right way leading up to that, and to the fact that, from my understanding, it's kind of like it was a bit of an unknown, a bit blindsided. You know, you go from potentially thinking you may be taking a receiver. You know, you're thinking you're a move away from the Super Bowl.
Right.
And then blindsided with a pick. I just don't understand how an organization, how you haven't addressed that beforehand when you make a move like that and really made sure that everything is tightened up and everybody's feeling good about that. Because if it's not, you're not doing it, in my opinion. You're just not. It's just not the way you run a business. It's not the way you're treating people. 16 years this guy's been there. You were on the doorstep of the Super Bowl, and you don't go out of your way to communicate that and to show that he's, you know, that, hey, you're wanted. This may be something we're doing, sorry. And, you know, but like you don't make sure that everybody's on the same page and feeling good about that. I think, you know, that's not just football. That's any business or team.
Yeah. Did Kansas City give you a heads up on Mahomes?
Yes, without a doubt. 100%. I mean, that's something that was talked about throughout the draft process, not just by Coach Reed, everybody involved in the personnel department. Yeah. And I'm talking multiple times. Hey, this really might be something we're doing. Are you okay with it? This is going to be the situation. This is, I mean, you know, like there were no surprises. I mean, it was absolutely laid out for me. And I think that all helps, you know, that when that stuff's communicated, it does make a difference how you treat people.
Yeah. Hey, what a pleasure to have you today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
It feels so lucky to have you. You've been such a credit to the league. And whether you go to a front office or a broadcaster or coaching, don't go to coaching. You own a life. Your kids are at the
I'm not sure my wife would let me.
But, Alex, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks, Colin.